morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Munro Dodd. There's no doubt that names carry meaning. Consider an address that's on Grand Boulevard versus one that's on Metcalf Avenue. Some other address is on Troost Avenue, and this one is on Minnesota Avenue, and so-and-so has an apartment on Ward Parkway, and another lives on Admiral Boulevard. In our sprawling metropolis, street names help us identify a place. The same way Fifth Avenue does in New York, and Michigan Avenue in Chicago, Beale Street in Memphis, and Rodeo Drive in L.A. Of course, they also help us find where we want to go and how to get there. But how did all our Kansas City area streets, and we have hundreds and hundreds of them, get their names? For what Admiral is Admiral Boulevard named? Dewey? Nimitz? Was it for a home appliance? Just who was Metcalf, whose name marks one of the major thoroughfares of Johnson County, and Split Log in Kansas City, Kansas? Today, we'll explore the mysteries, the logic, and the occasional illogic of our street names in the metropolitan area. To guide us, we have in the studio three folks with, what can I say, street smarts about our metro area. David Boutros is head of the Kansas City Research Center of the State Historical Society of Missouri. Matt Gilligan is with the Johnson County Museum, where he's a curator. And Daniel Serta teaches in the Department of Architecture, Design, and Planning. Folks, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Now, just for starters, David, who or what was this admiral whose moniker is on a street in the northern part of downtown Kansas City, Missouri? Where does a name like that come from?
After the Spanish-American War, there was a great interest in naming or honoring the admirals who had been the primary winners of that that war. And they couldn't quite settle on whom to name it for. So they named it simply Admiral to honor the three primary admirals that had won in the war.
So Admiral Dewey didn't get his own name on the street.
No, not its own.
A generic kind of admiral. And it's 7th Street, I believe, the east of Maine or something?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have just a few east-west streets that are named streets. Most of them are numbered streets, and that change actually occurred around 1875. Previous to that, we had just a wide number of named streets, and it became a little confusing as to how they were located and that type of thing. And they simply decided they would regularize it and bring it into conformity, often with what was being done in other adjacent cities and towns, as well as conforming to what was the national method of naming streets.
We see today when a subdivision is rolled out somewhere on the edges of our city, the streets get a whole new set of names, and sometimes they're just favorites of the developer, family and stuff like that. That's been true for a long time in Kansas City, hasn't it?
It has, from the very beginning. It seems to me there's three or four ways that streets are named. And one of them is more or less tradition. This is named for a landmark or something else that is specifically related to the location of that street. The second was to honor individuals. An example of the first would be something like Cliff Drive, which was located on the cliff overlooking the Missouri River. The second was to honor someone in specific, and sometimes that happened to be family members. An example of the first would be, the first issue would be Campbell Street, which was named for John Campbell, whose home was on Campbell at 3rd Street. Charlotte Street, however, is named for his wife, Charlotte, immediately adjacent to Campbell Street.
Now, Matt Gilligan of the Johnson County Museum, I know I have driven up and down Metcalf, been stuck in traffic there for decades now, and probably a lot of us in Kansas City have. But who the heck was Metcalf named for in Johnson County?
He was George Albert Metcalf. He was a banker from Oklahoma who bought land for investment purposes and to farm up here when he retired in 1899. He owned about 240 acres around 75th Street. Mm-hmm. The road used to be known as the Paola and Wyandotte Road. Mm-hmm. He was an early investor in the Strang Line Railroad. And he was also one of the first pioneers in building and selling homes on the deferred payment plan. And some of the first subdivisions in Overland Park were built on his land.
So once again, the person who lays it out calls the shots, at least in the beginning, for that.
Yeah.
Daniel, you know a lot about Armourdale. It was sort of a created town, and so the street names were created, too.
Yeah, well, a couple of interesting details. One is that, the sort of straightforward story about the naming of Armour that people often have heard is that it was named for the Armour family. The interesting thing is the logic of why it was named for the Armour family. It was not named for the Armour family because they built a plant there. It was actually named for the Armour family by the investors that laid out the town in the hopes of luring the Armours to then build there. It's a very peculiar thing, and we had never seen anybody really do anything like that until, a few years ago, Topeka renamed itself Google, right? It was literally a speculative scheme to try to get a company to locate to the place. But one of the interesting things within Armourdale is there's a basic pattern in the original street names of Armourdale that you find in many towns in the West. John Reps, who is a planning historian at Cornell University, wrote about this many years ago. There was a tradition in laying out towns of what was often referred to as the surveyor's grid. Surveyors would be hired by land developers to just lay out a basic grid of streets. And there were two simple conventions that they often used. One was to number streets typically parallel to the major body of water. Therefore, you have, First Street usually being sort of the riverfront street. And then incrementally, those number streets proceed and increase as the further you are from, the river usually. Well, in Kansas City, Kansas, this creates an unusual situation because that numbering happens relative to the Kansas River, which is generally running north and south on the east side of Armourdale, which is why you have numbered streets in Kansas City, Kansas, that run north and south rather than east and west like the rest of the metropolitan area.
That's why KCK seems a little contrary in its naming of stuff to all the rest of the
metropolitan area. But the other pattern that's really interesting in Armourdale, which is another convention, which was to take a standard set of anything of interest and sort of lay out streets that were named from that. A very common convention in most towns is naming streets after trees. Mm-hmm. So you have Alder, Spruce, Elm, Oak Street, that sort of thing. In Armourdale, what they did was really interesting. They named the major east-west streets after all of the Native American tribes that were either indigenous to or relocated. So the streets there from the Kansas River, Pawnee, Miami, Osage, Kansas, and then Kansas. And again, another little pattern in there. But again, that idea of the sort of honorific of trying to do something, you don't see that replicated much. Usually people will name, as you said before, developers will name the streets after themselves, family members, and whatnot.
Now, this was the Armourdale District of Kansas City, Kansas, for still an it was an industrial district, still sort of that way, I guess, in the crook of the Kansas River. It's part of KCK. Now, in downtown KCK, as you mentioned, it began as the town of Wyandotte, and it was laid out where the river was running more northern-south than east and west, as in Kansas City, Missouri.
Exactly.
And you see names like Split Log and Taromie and...
Well, the names of various Wyandotte families, basically. One little interesting piece of trivia about the Wyandotte tribes, they were relocated. They were a sort of a sect within the Huron tribe from Ohio, and they were relocated to Kansas in 1844. And in 1854, when the United States government decided to open what was then the Indian Territory to white settlement, the Wyandottes were faced with a choice. They could either retain their tribal status and relocate to Oklahoma, or they could essentially renounce their tribal status and become American citizens. Mm-hmm. And a number of them became American citizens and stayed in Wyandotte. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it was that same pattern. They were naming the places after themselves and essentially honoring their own families. And so Armstrong, for example, Silas and Lucy Armstrong, were not only prominent members of the tribe, but because the Wyandottes had been given that essentially reservation land, they actually became some of the wealthiest early settlers of Wyandotte County because they sold off as white settlement began. They sold off those farms that they had held for about a decade as white settlers arrived and then eventually began selling land to the railroads as Kansas City began to industrialize.
Matt Gilligan, the streets in Johnson County, unlike those in Wyandotte County, have picked up pretty well the Kansas City, Missouri numbering system.
Right.
And even the addresses are west, West something street in Overland Park or something,
right,
is west of Main Street in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 47th Street is where it starts in Johnson County, goes all the way to 215th maybe, and those numbers actually continue on into Miami County too. So they, yeah.
Right, you get into the 200s eventually way out there, all starting from downtown Kansas City,
right,
Missouri. You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd, and we're talking about how streets got their names here in the Kansas City area. David, it all seemed to start with the naming conventions and stuff right down there by the riverbank with the guys who developed the town of Kansas.
Right. The town of Kansas was originally laid out in 1838, and they named the variety of streets to, much like Daniel had suggested, in terms of a convention parallel to the Missouri River. That's why what we call Old Town now is at an askew from the north-south that you currently have in the rest of the town. Everything south of about 3rd, I guess it'd be 9th Street, 8th or 9th Street, is at a slight angle which parallels the Missouri River.
And then that all changed right there and got back into order with the rest of the surveying.
Exactly. And a lot of that had to do with the conventions that were established to create it dates back to the old Northwest conventions, because they were laying out sections and townships which were on a north-south basis. And what that provided was a way to identify parcels of land for the whole country, actually. And many of the streets, particularly when you get outside of the urban areas, begin as section lines, roads.
Mm-hmm.
They set on the section or the half section line, and they are part of a north-south. Warnell is a section line road.
And it was so named because of a farm it ran by.
Exactly.
John Warnell's, right?
John Warnell, and the home is still there.
So that earliest development, the town of Kansas, right down there near the Missouri River, they were numbering the streets, the east-west streets, back south from the river then, and naming the north-south streets.
Not originally. They were actually named streets. Pearl Street, which is approximately where 2nd would be, was the high society street originally. And there were various named streets, which I don't quite remember all of them. But those, as I said, were changed in 1875 to conform to the conventions that were common in the country.
Little would we know now that when the McGee's addition was laid out, the north, south, and the east, west streets all had names. There were Catherine and Amelie, addition to Grand and others,
right,
all named for members of his family, which got changed in the 1870s. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, and Grand is a very interesting street too, because E.M. McGee, the fellow that laid out that area, envisioned that to be the grandest street in town, and it was in fact the largest. The story is that you could drive you could do a U-turn with a six harness rig in that street, which was really quite large, because it took quite a bit to turn a wagon that size
in that area. So McGee's addition was between 12th and, say, around 20th, and centering on Grand and Oak and these others.
Exactly.
An early day thing.
Yeah, and was a very important. It had the first continuous block of buildings constructed in Kansas City that later proved to be something of a problem, because one of the buildings collapsed during the Civil War, and there were a number of Confederate women who were housed there in a prison that was there, and that was one of the causes of the raid on Lawrence.
An inspiration for it.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Gilligan, you mentioned the name Strang. Mm-hmm. He was a developer who went way out at the high ground in Johnson County and said, I'll start some real estate developments here. That name survives today in bits and pieces of kind of a road that doesn't follow the grid.
Right. Strang was an early railroad pioneer, founder of Overland Park, and founded the Strang Interurban Railroad, which ran from Kansas City to Olathe. He also had an airfield downtown Overland Park for flying exhibitions. So, you know, nationally renowned pilots would come and, you know, put on a display downtown Overland Park in the old days. And the line, the Strang line, eventually closed in 1940.
Yeah, and he did those flying displays to get potential real estate customers out there, homeowners and other
stuff.
Right,
and he also had he was kind of a failed Hollywood mogul in the middle of the country for a minute. He tried to, you know, start a motion picture company out here and made a few short films that, unfortunately, they don't survive, but, you know, it'd be great to have those because they'd be a real nice picture of early Johnson County.
Kansas City, is there a street or neighborhood you've been wondering how it got its name? Our panel might just have the answer, or you might be able to stump the band. At any rate, join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is KCURCST, or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. So, Daniel Serta, we've talked about downtown Kansas City, Kansas, and we've talked about Armadale and things. There's another district that hews close to the Kansas River, and that's the mm-hmm. Argentine District.
Yeah.
Where do the names there come from?
Well, Argentine has a really interesting name. I usually sum it up for people by saying, if you remember the old line, Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, the proper name of that railroad was the Argentine, Topeka, and Santa Fe. The Atchison segment of that never became very substantial in terms of the volume of freight traffic. And in the 1870s, the railroad made a very strategic decision to build a line east from Topeka into what became known as Argentine. There was a group of local investors who had established a smelter that was, the idea was that as the railroad arrived, they would take ore from the western end of the railroad in Colorado and refine it there. And so they named the town Argentine. The word argentium is Latin for silver. The idea was there would be a silver smelter at the end of the line, and Argentine to this day is still known as the Silver City.
And when you drive across 635 today, you cross track after track
Absolutely.
Of the, what's now the
BNSF
yard.
And that yard, by the late 1870s, was a very significant fixture in the regional Santa Fe system. Today, it is still the second largest freight distribution yard in the entire country.
Wow. Who were some of the other developers in Kansas City, Kansas, that got stuff going? Because there certainly are other developments.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting about Kansas City, Kansas, I was thinking about this listening to what Matt was just saying. There's a lot of development that happens back in the late 19th century that happens at tiny, little incremental scales. Uh-huh. If you look at the old real estate maps, there were developers that were laying out subdivisions that were about the size of a city block or two. I mean, literally. And it was a function of, you know, just available investment capital. There weren't banks financing, you know, massive 2,000-home subdivisions back in the late 19th century. Everything was very bootstrapped. And so one of the consequences of that is you not only have the sort of whole panoply of a lot of different names that get to, you know, have very kind of rarefied stories associated with them, but what it comes down to is you don't have a lot of names that emerge and take over sort of an entire area of the geography. In Argentine, for example, there's a whole range of family names that you find on local streets. Espinlaw, Gibbs, Steele, that in the same way it was being described about Johnson County, were basically farms and families that owned real estate and eventually started developing some of that real estate. But the scale of that was a tiny little incremental piece of what was then. And by the way, Argentine and both Armadale, it's important to note, were both incorporated cities. Armadale was one of the first towns consolidated with Wyandotte into what became Kansas City, Kansas. Argentine was an independent city until 1909. And the primary reason that it joined Kansas City, Kansas, was because the smelter shut down its operations in 1907. It was the city's major employer. It was the city's major taxpayer. And the town fiscally was in terrible, terrible shape, and it annexed itself, voluntarily annexed itself to Kansas City, Kansas, essentially to keep itself afloat.
The city of Kansas City, Kansas consolidated about, what, five towns in
1886. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting in itself. That was actually done by a gubernatorial proclamation. The governor of Kansas at the time decided we need a major town in the eastern end of the state. And there was actually a fair degree of local resistance to that, and that led to disputes over everything from what it should be called, which is something that I'm not entirely sure has been resolved to this day, to, you know, should this town remain there? There was actually a movement when I was growing. I grew up in Armourdale about 25 years ago. There were a number of very vocal citizens who were dissatisfied with the quality of city services that actually started pushing for de-annexation.
De-annexation.
Which currently you hear murmurs about every now and then.
Speaking of Kansas City, Kansas, we have a caller, Leo, calling from Strawberry Hill. Leo?
That's correct.
And your question?
And well, I have a couple of questions. I mean, I'm heavily invested here in Strawberry Hill. I own a building right up on the bluffs on what is now 4th Street, and there used to be a 3rd, a 2nd, and a 1st before they brought the interstate through. And that wiped out about a third of the Strawberry Hill neighborhood. But the question I actually had concerns the boulevard system that Kansas City is known for. Kansas City is known for one of the most notable I can come up with right now is Carnes, which, as I understood it, were streets that were built specifically to connect one location with another location without regard to any particular grid. Is there anything to that?
The system was really developed as a kind of a long park system, if you would. And they also attempted to create transportation links and to bolster property values in part and to clear out areas that they didn't think were particularly good neighborhoods. When it was originally developed, it was the park system. Part of it was based upon a belief that having more open spaces for the urban community was going to be healthier and certainly more attractive. It was based in part upon a concept that flowed out of the Chicago World's Fair that looked for a beautiful city, the City Beautiful movement. So it was not bounded by the grid system, and in fact was encouraged by following topography of lands that existed to use the existing land form as part of the beautification process.
Oh, that's interesting. One thing that was pointed out to me again, and another question I'd ask if you don't mind, Valentine Road inexplicably between Broadway and what is now Southwest Private Way inexplicably takes a curve. And I was told that at one time there was a horse racing track there. Is that correct?
I know there was a horse racing track down in the bottoms. I don't know that it was that far south. Some of those areas there were a number of efforts to put railroad lines through that area because that was in some ways the only way that you could continue further south. And railroads traditionally follow the lay of the land because it's expensive to dig out areas and to make it into a different land mass. So I think what you may be seeing is some of the effort to avoid those track lines and other kinds of things down in there.
Leo, we have Dan Serta wants to pitch in.
Well,
there.
I was just going to say, one of the important things to know about the Parks and Boulevard system in Kansas City, Missouri, was there were two essentially public actions that it was taking that were very difficult otherwise at the time. The first was the attempt to sort of regularize and as David said, beautify some areas relative to the topography. A lot of that pattern that I described before, those surveyor grids, was laid out without much regard to topography. And you had streets that were, you know, crooks and hollows and that didn't make a lot of sense in the broader scheme of things. And so it wasn't literal. I mean, beautification was the end goal, but part of the justification was just trying to create a little more rhyme and reason in where streets were located relative to the lay of the land. The other thing that's really important to recognize is that the parks and boulevard system was conceived in Kansas City in the early 1890s at a time when cities had very, very limited regulatory authority. There were no building codes at the time. Zoning didn't emerge for another 30 or so years. And so basically, by condemning that right-of-way, what the city was trying to do was sort of put its own planning imprint, so to speak, on the physical character of the city. And as David described, an important part of that had to do with connecting areas that, in transportation terms, were largely disconnected from each other. And one of the reasons for that was because they were laid out so incrementally in terms of these little grids where the streets didn't line up.
All right, guys, we've got a lot of callers here, and we like to ask our callers to hold on while we go for a break. And we'll be back after that to talk more about the names we all see every time we walk, ride, or drive around town, our streets. You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. Today we're covering Kansas City's streets, from boulevards to avenues, terraces to places, courts, and all of that. With us are David Boutros of the State Historical Society of Missouri Research Center, Kansas City, Matt Gilligan of the Johnson County Museum, and Daniel Serta of the School of Architecture, Design, and Planning at the University of Kansas. What stories have you heard about how streets were named and for what or whom? You can join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. Or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And among the people who are coming in through social media and email is Georgette, who asks, how did the Paseo Boulevard start? Who wants to take a shot at that?
Wow. Paseo was part of the park system. And it received its name because it was a people place. And it contained, on the north end, and you still see remnants of it, a series of small parks, if you would, that were part of the system. They included a gigantic fountain, which unfortunately is now gone. There is a palisade. There are a number of other things. And the Paseo was intended to give a sense of those broad boulevards in Spain and in Mexico.
Yeah, the idea. I mean, the Paseo really was the grand centerpiece of the first part of the parks and boulevard system in Kansas City, and it is the one piece that is most deliberately sort of an early urban renewal project. If you look even at the pattern of the Paseo today, you notice there's sort of jogs where it skews a little bit east or west as it's running north and south. And the reason for that is because there might be a half a block a little bit to the west that was very substandard housing that they wanted to clear out and condemn. Or there might have been an area that was a little more hollowed out that they wanted to include into it. But the basic idea was it represented the grandest of ambitions of the system and was named after the Paseo de la Reforma in Mexico City.
And it's often pictured in postcards of the era as the exemplar of everything good about the boulevard system. Let's go now to Mary in Midtown. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for waiting. What's your question?
I'm asking about a really obscure street. It's only two blocks long, running east and west at 52nd and Main. It's kind of nestled there between UMKC and Lewis Park. And a lot of big Catholic families were raised on Concord Street during the 50s and 60s. I still live there, and I'm wondering how Concord Street might have gotten its name.
Okay, I'm looking around the room, yeah. And I believe you have stumped the band on this one, Mary, but that doesn't mean we can't find out for you and get back. So if or maybe even next time we'll roll through a list. Next time we do a history show in another month, we'll roll through a list of some of these answers. We'll try to find out for you. Good question, though. Thanks very much, Mary. And now let's go to Paul in Overland Park. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. I've got a question. Since I've lived here 30 years now, why was the terrace numbering system installed? So you have 45th Street and then 45th Terrace, et cetera. They forgot some numbers and had to add some more streets.
Actually, I think what it came to, or what it was about, was to use the land a little more effectively and provide a different kind of an access to it. And the J.C. Nichols Company, used it extensively as a way to identify the different areas.
Well, there's a pattern, though, in that's really important, and efficiency is at the core of it, as David said. And that was, if you look at the grid of streets, for example, in downtown Kansas City or even toward Westport, they're essentially long blocks north to south. And part of what Nichols did as he laid out his subdivisions is he tried to create shorter, more compact blocks for residence purposes. And if you look at them, the blocks in many segments of the Country Club District proper tend to be actually wide east to west, not long north to south. And mm-hmm. so the terrace numbering system in between those numbered streets allowed the ability to basically break up what would have been one very large block into two smaller ones.
Paul, thanks very much for your call. Okay. Let's go on to a question that I have had for a long time, Matt Gilligan, about Switzer. We may not know how it's pronounced that way, but who was this worthy who got a street named after him or her?
Amos Switzer was his name. He was a landowner in the Greenwood area of Johnson County. Mm-hmm. There was a Greenwood school that was a one-room schoolhouse, and that schoolhouse is actually now where our museum is housed, 1927. And he was just a landowner. He was very active in the Grange during the 1880s, and he passed away in 1904. I don't have an answer about the pronunciation, but it's just, he called it Switzer, so do we.
I lived here 3 decades now, and I often mispronounce it in front of longtime Johnson Countyans who look with me with disapproval when I say Switzer. So there must be an answer out there somewhere. There's another major north-south street in Johnson County that's not named after anybody. It was named after, I believe, a church. It's Antioch.
Mm-hmm. Antioch was originally called Chase Road, which was the Chase family owned the land. And it was later renamed Antioch because the Antioch Cumberland Church was built there in 1873. And that was around 75th in what would be 75th in Antioch today.
Okay, let's go. We haven't had an Independence question yet today, so let's go to Lyle in Independence. Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning. There is a meandering road that leads from the Independence Square towards the vicinity of 40 Highway and Blue Ridge Cutoff, and it's called Shealy Road. And it cuts across the grid. It wanders in diagonal to the east-west-north-south street grid. And I'd like to know who it's named for, and also, was it originally one of the wagon trails like Westport Road was?
Let me ask you, does it go southwest from the square?
Yes.
Well, there is a street in Independence that it occasionally picks up, and it's called Westport Road. And it was part of the road that stretched between Independence and Westport. If this is the same as the line of Shealy, then that might help explain it.
Shealy parallels Westport Road, but it's not the same street.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lyle, that is another one we're going to have to look up, and we will try to come up with the answer next month when we come back on the air. A great question, but you've stumped the band.
Thank you very much.
I thought that you were going to talk about Winter Road, which was named for Willard Winter, who was a land developer in the area and laid out a connection between Kansas City and Independence.
I did have a second question. That is, were some of the streets that curve around, were they originally Indian trails?
I'll give you an example. I live on a street called Shawnee Road in Kansas City, Kansas. It's actually in an area that's sort of between Argentine and the Rosedale community, which is near I-35 and the KU Med Center campus. it was actually laid out by members of the Shawnee tribe who were relocated to Kansas in the 1830s before the Wyandots. And it was a road that started down at the Kansas River where there was a ferry landing that crossed the river. And it follows the ridgeline. People that come to my neighborhood get lost all of the time because there is no directionality to it other than it following the peak of the ridge. So it swings back and forth throughout its course. The interesting thing about the Shawnee Road is the Shawnee Road meanders generally southwest and then eventually takes a sharp turn to the south. And the literal connection's not really there anymore, but it originally connected to what was called the Mission Road, which is where the Shawnee Methodist Mission that Thomas Johnson had established in the 1830s is located.
So I suppose that if you are coming to this area in the 1830s or 40s, you would look for any path of least resistance, and if someone had traveled a trail before and broken a little bit of trail, maybe a little bit of space, you'd go that way and it could become a road.
Absolutely.
Huh. And there are some roads that are based upon the original Indian traces. Metropolitan, which is on the north side of the Kansas River, was an original Indian pathway, if you would. And the same was true with Johnson Drive, that essentially, in many ways, connected many of the missions that were servicing the Shawnee, particularly in that area. I should let the Johnson County and talk about that. On the Missouri side, 24 Highway was probably originally laid out on an east-west road. There's some indication that, let's use the Shoto Traffic Way is based roughly on an original Indian pathway, because the place where it meets the Missouri River is actually a traditional crossing point that dates back to the 1820s.
And it's named for one of the early European-American settlers of the area.
The supposed first family of Kansas City, yes.
The Choteau family. Let's now go to Martha in Lawson. Martha, thanks for waiting.
Thank you for having me. I have a question. The road Drexel Street, what was it named after? Because my husband is named Drexel, and we just wondered where the name came from.
Drexel in what city?
Kansas City.
Drexel in Kansas City. Can any member of our astute group do that? Martha, you have
Drexel.
You've got us on that one. I will look it up myself. Promise to you, and come back when we're back in a month, we'll try to answer these questions. Thanks very much.
Is it the same one that is it connected to the one in Chicago? Because in Chicago, it's Drexel Boulevard as well.
I don't know about that, but okay. Martha, thanks very much for your question. We'll try to get an answer for you.
Okay, thank you.
Let's talk now to Brad in Prairie Village. Good morning, Brad.
Hi there. I guess if you're going to lay out a university town and you needed an educational theme, you could name the streets after the states in which they entered the Union.
As in Lawrence.
As in Lawrence.
Yeah, I believe that's what they did, and also a lot of the early Massachusetts settlers and the people who funded them got some names, too.
But I noticed that they didn't have Oklahoma or Hawaii streets yet.
Too early.
Lawrence is growing west, but it hasn't quite gotten there yet, I think is what it comes down to.
It's not heading east.
exactly.
It's heading west.
All right, Brad, thanks very much for your call. Now let's go to Judy in Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Go ahead with your question.
I want to know if there are any streets that are named after working people, labor leaders, or people of color. As far as I've investigated, the only labor leader who we have a street named after is Cesar Chavez, and he isn't even from here. But there are many people missing, and it seems like most of our streets get named after wealthy white businessmen or their wives. And I just wondered if there was any comment about that.
I think that's the reality of the power structure, especially in the 19th century, when most of these streets were named. We do have streets named now. I mean, the most obvious is Emanuel Cleaver, which was originally 47th Street, and at least for a portion of it. It seems to me there was also one named, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He was a minister, a black minister on the east side, and he was a political power during the 1920s and 30s.
Well, one of the things that strikes me as I'm thinking about your question is that, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years, I can't think of attempts to name streets after working class people or labor leaders, but I can absolutely think of attempts to name either parks, squares, or community facilities after people in that vein. Two great examples in Kansas City, Kansas, which were both basically part of a long effort by a woman who passed away a few years ago. There was an attempt about 10 years ago to rename what was originally Argentine High School after a man named Saturnino Alvarado. And the Alvarado family is still in Argentine. And the quick story of that is that Alvarado was a Mexican immigrant back in the 1920s who struggled dearly with the Kansas City, Kansas school district to essentially force them to allow his two U.S. citizen children to be admitted to Argentine High School. Mexican children were not allowed to attend high school at that time. And he was successful. It took about 5 years. They graduated in their late teens, early 20s. And the attempt to name the school did not quite succeed, but the auditorium at the school, which is now a middle school, was named after Alvarado. The other effort that that same person was involved in was to rename the community center in honor of a gentleman who had run a boxing program in a local, what was called the parish house in Argentine. And his name was Joe Amayo, and the community center does bear his name now. So I can think of any number of efforts to name either a facility, a park, or a square after someone like that, but not I just don't see that happen much with streets.
Yeah, well, one interesting example I like to bring up is that we have a street named after James A. Reed, who was a former senator but also a corporate attorney who represented companies against unions. But his nemesis, Frank P. Walsh, who was a nationally known labor attorney and really a pioneer in labor law in this country, we don't have any street named after him, and he was from Kansas City. So maybe we should have a campaign for that.
Frank Walsh Street. Judy, thank you very much for your call. Interesting points. Will asked earlier on Twitter for the origin of Gregory Boulevard. I think that one's you can knock that out of the park, Dave.
Traditionally, it's referred to the first mayor of Kansas City, who actually was illegal because he lived outside of the corporate city limits. I'm not certain that that's true. It seems to me that 71st Street is an awful long ways out from what was downtown Kansas City at the time that he was mayor. But that's the general answer that you hear.
Several of the park streets are named after members of the Parks Board.
Yes.
Meyer Boulevard for August Meyer.
Right. And Delbert Haft, the circle, it's out on Meyer Boulevard. Haft was the attorney for the school board, the park board at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Van Brunt is named for Adrian Van Brunt, who was the one of the early presidents or involved with the school board. Carnes Boulevard is named for a very active member of the board.
Let's go now to Jay in Leawood. Good morning, Jay.
Hi. Yeah, I got a quick question for you. I've noticed in Kansas City that you see so many different streets with the same names and the same street with different names a lot, and it seems to go against the kind of logic to identify the discrete places or help you get places. Like, for example, if you look at the South Johnson County maps, there's like a cul-de-sac here with a rosewood, and then one over to the right a few miles with a rosewood, and then one over to the left and with a Lee Street, and just several little streets with the same names. There's even a 75th Street, the corner of 75th and 75th, a little east of Metcalf. And then also with the same street with different names, Steel Road, when you go south to Merriam, it changes names about five times. So I wonder if you could explain how that might be or why they would do that.
Matt Gillen, again, you want to take a shot at some of these names?
Wow, that's a lot. I'm not sure. I mean, the only thing I can say about the Lee, there's so many Lees out there, is, you know, and the town bears his name too, is Oscar G. Lee for Leewood. He spelled it L-E-E. Whatever developer, a developer changed it to L-E-A because they thought it might look more attractive to potential buyers. But he was a retired policeman who moved here from Oklahoma in 1920 and owned, just a ton of land. And he also owned the 10th and Main building downtown in Kansas City, which used to be called the Lee building. As far as those, the 75th and 75th, I'm not really sure about that one.
We know that there in Johnson County, there are a lot of towns that abut one another, and these began often as real estate developments, as
right.
you said.
Right.
And although some conventions have been followed, there are others that split. I know, for instance, in Kansas City, Missouri, a Grand Boulevard or Avenue, depending on what part of the Grand you're on, becomes Morningside out in the, in some of the J.C. Nichols districts, and I don't know the answer for that.
I think at 47th Street through the plaza, I mean, that has several different names as you go west. It comes some kind of parkway or east, changes names several times,
like
too.
Cleaver, so. Too.
The discontinuity piece, I mean, sometimes it's just because a particular segment was named after something else, but I think the larger phenomenon that you're describing there is what I was talking about before, where these, you know, there's a patchwork quilt of subdivisions that have been laid out maybe 85 years apart from each other, and somebody had the same clever name of using similar sounding names. One of the places, though, where that's had to be reconciled, and it were major efforts, were when towns were consolidated. When Westport became part of Kansas City, Westport Road was called Main Street. It was Main Street and Westport.
Huh.
So you couldn't have, and you would have the intersection then of Main Street and Main Street, right? So you had to regularize that. You named it Westport Road. The same thing happened when Armourdale and Wyandotte were consolidated. The two major streets in Wyandotte were Kansas Avenue and Nebraska Avenue. And there was a Kansas Avenue in Armourdale. And so they renamed the Kansas Avenue in Wyandotte State Avenue, which is still called to this day.
Well, thank you very much for taking my question. I appreciate it.
Jay, thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
Daniel, I've got to ask you this question. Why is one of the main streets in downtown KCK called Minnesota Avenue?
Well, the major east-west streets were named after basically the free territories. And it sort of happenstance because there's, again, I mentioned John Reps before from Cornell. One of the points that he made is that there was often, again, an ambition in the logic of those surveyor grids. And so you would have Main Street perpendicular to the waterfront, but you would have usually parallel to the waterfront a commercial avenue because that was where the major commerce was going to be located. Well, typically it was on Main Street that you wanted your buildings. That's why you have this sort of idyllic idea that Main Street is sort of the downtown of every small town throughout America. Well, Main Street was called different things in different places, and it's just interesting that in Kansas City, Kansas, what was essentially Main Street was actually named Minnesota Avenue.
Matt Gillian, let's go out south just a second because William has emailed us to ask about, Dan called in to ask about Black Bob Road out there. Who was Black Bob?
He was a half Miami, half Shawnee Indian. And he settled in the in Johnson County and had a small band of Shawnee Indians in the area. He died in the early 1860s. And, you know, you see his name on community centers, obviously the big street out in Olathe. And Blackfeather Farm, which is still out in Overland Park, that was on land owned by the tribe that he led.
Interesting. Let's go now to J.D. in Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, J.D.
How you all doing this morning?
We are fine. What's your question?
Well, I live over here near KU Hospital. There's a road that runs just south of there called Olathe Boulevard. It only runs between, like, State Line and Rainbow. And there's a road out in Olathe called Kansas City Road that runs nowhere near Kansas City. And so I was wondering if there was any previous connection between those two roads and the town that they share the name with.
I think we've got the guys who can answer that for you, J.D. Who wants to start?
It's close in time.
Dan.
Well, I'm not entirely sure about the Olathe Road, but the Kansas City Road piece, there's a very simple history to that. Again, this is more like an Eastern convention, that you would have roads that would connect different towns that were at that point kind of very disconnected and very distant from each other. We don't think of Lathrop being far away because we have the interstate now. But I always tell everybody, if you have any misperception about the distance, try walking it, and then you'll really know what it means.
No, so thanks.
The Kansas City Road was the road that followed the bed of Turkey Creek, essentially almost from downtown Kansas City all the way out to Olathe. And we don't, you know, there's segments of it that are called Southwest Boulevard and Merriam Drive and Merriam Lane. We don't think about it as the Kansas City Road proper anymore because we now have Interstate 35, which fulfills that function.
Did it originally run all the way down to Kansas City under that name?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, well, it was named other things, but it was the same road. Yeah.
I also have an answer for the previous caller who asked about 75th Street and 75th Street.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little cul-de-sac out there that he was talking about just east of Metcalf, and the addresses in that cul-de-sac are numbered according to the numbers on 75th Street.
Okay.
That's all that is.
All right. J.D., thanks very much for your call this morning. Now let's go to Kathleen in Brookside. Kathleen?
Oh, hi. This is really an interesting program. I'm really glad you have it on. I live on a little street in Brookside, and it's only a few blocks long. It's called Winthrop, and I was wondering who that was named after. It's like right past 68th, and it goes east-west instead of, north-south.
Kathleen, thanks very much. We'll see if anyone has the answer to that, and that's another one we're going to have to add to our collection of things to look up, Winthrop. And that's all the time we have for today's show, unhappily, because our guests have been very good. They've been David Boutros of the State Historical Society of Missouri Research Center, Kansas City, Matt Gilligan of the Johnson County Museum, and Dan Serta of the School of Architecture, Design, and Planning at the University of Kansas. Gentlemen, thank you so much for this morning's show. Maybe we'll do it again sometime. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Our announcer is Kim Noble. You can listen to this program again, subscribe to our podcast, or listen to any of our previous programs on kcur.org. Up to Date is next with the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet and the best chef in the Midwest. I'm Monroe Dodd. This is Central Standard, and enjoy your weekend.